Just going to take a quick break from the show, everybody, to tell you a little bit more about one of my favorite things in the world, Audible. Audible lets you enjoy all of your audio entertainment in one app. You'll always find the best of what you love, or there's new stuff to discover all the time in Audible. Incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre, from bestsellers to new releases to celebrity memoirs, mysteries, and thrillers, motivation, wellness, business. They got it all here in Audible, and you can have it all too. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, including Small Town Murder, Crime and Sports, and Your Stupid Opinions, with highly anticipated new releases and next listen recommendations to habituate every type of thriller listener. And you can keep your heart rate up month after month with this pulse-pounding collection you can't hear anywhere else. The true crime stuff they have is amazing. Right now, what I'm listening to is The Family by Ed Sanders, and it is a full, complete retrospective on the Manson family, kind of all of what they were doing to set their weird stuff up. It is amazing and incredibly detailed. Great stuff, and there's so much more on there. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog, including bestsellers, new releases, latest stuff. You got it. It's all there. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500. That's audible.com/smalltownmurder or text smalltownmurder to 500-500.
Now back to the show.
This episode is brought to you by Philo.
Oh, philo.tv.
That's right. There's nothing better than unwinding, watching a little TV. But it's a real hassle if with, you know, cable trying to flick through. Cut the cord. Get rid of that. You don't need any of that. Philo has all that you could need here. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month.
What?
Can't beat it. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they have an unlimited DVR for 1 year, so you can save all your favorite shows.
Wow.
Watch them when you want to watch them. Yeah. That's fantastic. Never miss a minute of shows like Death by Fame, Married to Evil, or The Prison Confessions of Gypsy Rose Blanchard.
Oh.
Good stuff. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like ID, A&E, and Law and Crime, and many more. With Philo, you can start watching in seconds for less money and much less hassle. Really easy to use, really easy to sign up. Try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/smalltownmurder. That's philo.tv/smalltownmurder to get 50% off your first month.
Now back to the show.
Everybody, and welcome back to Small Town Murder Express.
Yay! Choo-choo!
Ah, yay indeed, Jimmy. Yay indeed. My name is James Petragallo. I'm here with my co-host.
I'm Jimmy Wissman.
Thank you, folks, so much for joining us.
Yeah.
All aboard the murder train, pulling away from the station, coming to you. Here we go. We have, a crazy... Every one of these cases are crazy, because it's like, this case is too crazy not to do, but not long enough for a full show. Well, let's pack it into this hour instead, and it's insane.
And there's not enough words in the English vocabulary that lend to insanity, crazy, unhinged.
crazy with, to the fourth power, to the tenth, but you can just say, what level of crazy it is. That's
it. It's always bananas around here.
Before we get started, real quick, head over to shutupandgivememurder.com. All the tickets are on sale for the rest of the year for live shows. Get them quick, because there's shows that are months away that are sold out already. Boston, Salt Lake City, Denver's almost there, San Diego, Minneapolis almost there. They're all getting there. So
all selling.
Get in there right away. We can't wait. And of course, be there the 23rd and 4th of March in Seattle, and then the 25th, two shows in Portland that night.
Right.
So get your asses there. We can't wait. shutupandgivememurder.com. Also, get the tickets to the virtual live show, 420. That's right. Jimmy's getting stoned. He's going to laugh his ass off. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that's available for a week after that as well. Yeah. So you can get those tickets. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com. Also, head over to Patreon.com/CrimeAndSports. That's where you get all the bonus stuff.
Yeah.
Full back catalog, everything like that. Anybody $5 or above, you get access to everything, including new episodes every other week. You get one Crime and Sports, one Small Town Murder, and you get it all. This week for Crime and Sports, we're going to talk about the worst franchise beginning in the history of sports, the 0-26 Tampa Bay Buccaneers in the beginning.
Son of a bitch.
Why were they dressed like creamsicles? Why did they have a strangely homoerotic mascot? We'll talk about all of it.
Shout out for sticking it out.
Let's do it. Talk about it all. Then for crime and, or for Small Town Murder, we're going to talk about a very requested case.
Yeah.
Jodi Arias, we'll talk about.
Yeah.
We were both in Phoenix during that time. So we will look inside the mind and other places of Jodi Arias, as the courts did as well. She will let you only if you come knocking. If you come knocking, come around the back door, though. She doesn't want you to come around the front, from what I understand. So that is patreon.com/crimeinsports. And keep an eye out. Coming soon, our new show. It is coming. Your Stupid Opinions, where we talk about terrible, stupid reviews all over the internet. It is coming. Yeah, there's a bunch of business stuff we had to get in a row. Another thing, we had a bunch of stuff we were working on. So we wanted to be able to launch it hardcore.
Yeah.
And we will be doing that. So keep an eye out. That said, I think it's time for everybody to sit back. I think it's time to clear the lungs, maybe. You know what I mean? That's right. Where are you? You got a Dairy Queen with your kid's soccer team? They just played a game? That's right.
Slap the dilly bar out of that goalie's hand.
No. Have them raise them to the sky. Cones to the sky, damn it. And you have the whole damn lot of tiny, tiny eight-year-olds shout, Shut up and give me murder. There we go.
Let's go on a trip,
Jimmy. Now that you've ruined the minds of a good section of the town's youth, let's move on.
Okay.
Let's go on a trip, shall we?
We shall.
All right, we're going to Montana today.
Hey!
Oh, big sky country. Going to Butte, Montana, which, of course, is the funniest town in America because it has the word butt in it. So we can't beat that. Any town with the word butt in it is a winner. For me.
Right
in your Butte hole. It's funny that we're doing Jodi Arias this week on Patreon and we're covering Butte. So this is in southwestern Montana.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not close to anything. It's almost 2 hours to Missoula, Montana. Yeah. That's the closest. Yeah. And then it's about 4 days from any other town or city, really. It's anywhere. It's a stop. It's a stopover. It's no direct drives from anywhere.
Missoula or... empty gas.
That's it. It's about 5 hours to Fort Smith, Montana, which was the last Montana episode we did. Population here, I think it's the second largest town, city in Montana, I believe.
Really?
I could be wrong. It might be the third. 34,465.
Billings has got to be bigger, right?
I think it's bigger. I think Missoula's bigger, I believe. Median household income here is about $40,359, so it's a little bit low, and the cost of housing is also a little bit low, but it's nicknamed the richest hill on earth.
What does that mean?
That's the motto. I don't know. I think because there was a lot of mining here.
I was going to say it has to do with some gold panning.
A lot of mining. As a matter of fact, into the history of the town very quickly, there was a tragic accident here, 2,000 feet below the ground.
Oh, no.
So, you know, most of the way into the Earth's crust, essentially.
Almost to hell. What happened?
Pretty much. June 8th, 1917, this happened, too. So this is in... there's no...
yikes.
They don't know what they're doing. We're just digging a hole. We got 2,000 feet down. Well, shit, send some immigrants in there. All right. And then a bunch of my relatives are saying, it's so nice it'll be in America. And then they're going to be 2,000 feet in the ground before you know it.
2,000.
2,000 feet here. It's a fire happened in the Granite Mountain mine shaft. It spewed flames, smoke, and poisonous gases throughout the labyrinth of tunnels.
Yeah.
Including into another connected mine, the Spectacular Mine. There was a rescue effort, but carbon monoxide was screwing the whole thing up because it couldn't do anything.
It's over.
Several men barricaded themselves against bulkheads to try to save their lives, but a lot of people died in a panic and ran each other
breathed
over.
Breathed up all the oxygen.
That's what happens. Rescue workers set up a big fan to prevent the fire from spreading. We'll get a fan! It was 1917, so it was just two guys in a big, like, just a big piece of wood, just waving it back and forth. This worked for a little while, but then when the rescuers tried to use water, the water evaporated, creating steam that burned everyone who was trying to escape.
Oh, my God!
Yay, we're going, oh, Jesus, what the fuck is this horrible raining down terror upon
me? Holy shit.
It's hotter than the fire. What a terrible
the
thing.
The fire was way over there. You poured water on it. Now the steam's all the way over here.
Jesus Christ, man.
Holy shit.
Many of the bodies were mutilated beyond recognition, leaving many, many unidentified bodies. 168 people died total in this. So it was terrible.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, as of 2017, it remained the largest hard rock mining accident in history. Not good.
Only 100 more people died on that MH370 plane, and they're making documentaries about it.
This is wild. Reviews of this town here. Okay.
Yeah.
5 stars. Let's give you a little variety. 5 stars. Born and raised here in Butte. Everyone knows everyone kind of town that comes together when needed. Okay. Yeah, kind of your typical I love one this small town review, which is nice. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's 3 stars. You know, not as good. Like any city, we have a few instances of attempted robberies, mainly casinos, in parentheses. Well, that's where the money is, which doesn't really affect you unless you work at the casino, so who cares?
That doesn't seem like... I've seen a lot of movies about fucking over a casino. That's never a good idea.
It never works.
You're going to get your ass kicked or dead.
You end up with your head in a vice talking about Charlie M. It's not good for anybody. drug and alcohol abuse also. The police are highly visible during uptown festivals like St. Patrick's Day, the Folk Festival, and Evil Knievel Days, which we'll talk about.
What?
Oh, yeah, they have Evil Knievel Days. Oh, Jesus. Wow. And this tends to lessen the likelihood of crimes, fights, drinking and driving, etc., because there's cops around
there. Yeah, because there's cops there. Yeah,
here is 1 star. Butte is the Butte hole of the U.S.
Yeah,
there we
go.
I was waiting for someone to put that in
Somebody's
there.
Gonna,
Trashiest city this side of Mexico. Well, you've never been to Tucson, I think.
This side of Mexico.
This side of Mexico.
Means the whole country. This
never been to Kingman, I don't think.
Yeah.
Walk the neighborhoods and trash is everywhere. I don't know if they mean people or actual trash. People are like the Stepford Wives, very nice on the surface, until they get in a car, then the horns come out. Mean drivers. There is no respect for the water. Neighbors water daily. Really? I don't know if they have droughts there. Businesses are terrible and do nothing of customer service. They only want tourist money and refer to them as nuisances per the local news to be put up with in the summer. The only positive is low traffic. Great place to avoid.
Okay.
So, and then finally, 1 star. They come out swinging hard here. They come out like Tyson in the first round. 1 star. Butte is full of inbred, unemployed, alcoholic drug addicts. That is laying it right on the line. Some nice new people move in briefly, but leave quite shell-shocked. The locals are an angry lot of dulled zombies. Fun for slumming for a day, though, makes any town look much better.
Okay, so it's a fun place to go joke about that you're in Butte.
Yeah, you go, wow, that place is trash, and then you leave. And some people really, there's a lot of disagreement. There's a lot of 1 star and a lot of 5 stars for this town.
Yeah.
Now, things to do, it's Evil Knievel Days, obviously. I mean, what else are we going to talk about? This is part of Evil Knievel. You want to see some wild evil? Evil Knievel, this is kind of even wild for Evil Knievel, Jimmy. Here, roll your chair over. What see that? It? Oh, God. Look at that. It's kids in a big blow-up bubble on a pool. It's not dangerous at all. They're just bumping into each other.
That's not taking your life in your own hands.
No.
That's just a lot of fun right there.
They do have daredevils there. There's a guy jumping a dirt bike. That looks like fun.
Oh, and that globe right there? Look at that globe.
Yeah.
That metal globe. They put motorcyclists in that than one and
ride around
it. That shit's crazy.
I've seen that. It's like a little steel cage match for motorcycles.
Yeah.
They have daredevils with their will take their skateboards, BMX bikes, motorcycles, and more to extreme heights.
Oh.
And put on a dangerous show in the spirit of Evil Knievel that you won't find anywhere else, including kids in big bubbles bumping into each other in a pool. Ooh.
Evel Knievel's the worst hero ever. He got hurt so many times, and we all tried to do the same shit and got hurt too.
Oh yeah, that he caused so many injuries. How many? Yeah. How many broken arms? A boon for the emergency room business of the country in the 70s. They were like, oh man, we're seeing 10-year-olds with broken arms like crazy. Come on in.
And then he went and had a son to do the same shit.
Dirt bikes and ERs. So. That said, once you get done with Evel Knievel days, let's talk about a murder. What do you say, everybody?
Hey.
All right.
It's not somebody's drying in a very creative way to commit suicide.
No, this is not a way to use off-road vehicles to kill yourself spectacularly. This is a different way here.
All right.
We're going to go back in time a bunch this time. Last Express episode was like 2009. It was like very recent,
which is weird.
We're going all the way. We're going to 1966 here today.
Oh, shit.
Montana, 1966. Yeah. You could be a real cowboy here back then.
Yeah.
For real. Like, you could be like a no shit cowboy back in these days. These are real people.
He's like 16 right now.
Oh, yeah. He's still looking to hurt himself in some way, shape, or form. So let's talk about this. We'll go back to April 26th, 1966. Now, I have to tell you, everybody, I read a lot of court documents. Like, when you're looking for cases between me and Allison, too, you read 100 different cases. So most of the time, it's a dry recitation of the facts.
Sure.
The person doing it, obviously typing it up, isn't putting like a spin on it. It's not a novel. You know what I mean?
Opinion?
Yeah. Every once in a while, something's so nuts that in the beginning they're like, "Holy shit, this is wild!" And it's to crack that person who does nothing but put out the court documents of murders. You really got to have something wild. And in the beginning of this case, it says this quote. The circumstances leading up to and surrounding the violent death here, I won't tell you of who, blah, 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 reveal a drama not unlike the plot of a sordid grade B movie.
Oh, a sordid one.
A sordid grade B movie.
And that is from court documents.
That is from court documents from 1967 in Montana. So
They allowed a little bit of
they were like,
editorializing. I like it.
That was this person going, dude, this is... Fuck. This is wild. So, yes. Now we'll talk about quickly the building here. This is important. The building that everything's going to take place in. It consists of 6 apartments. It is three stories high, two apartments wide. That's how this works here. So there's different people that live amongst these little cubicles of houses. First guy we're going to talk about, Roy A. Brooks. All right.
Okay.
Roy is 60 years old in 1966. So born in 1906.
That is an old man.
Yeah. Very dead by now, either way, matter what happens here. Yeah. So he would be well dead no matter what. So
goddamn pioneer in fucking Butte, Montana.
Well, he's not from there. So he moved there. We'll talk about his background a little bit here. Mm-hmm. He's got a wife named Mary Brooks, Roy and Mary. They live on the ground floor of the six building here. Mm-hmm. It is him and his wife. It's Roy and Mary, and they live with their other apartment on the ground floor is a guy named Jay Smith and his wife. Okay. So Roy Brooks and Mary, Jay Smith and his wife. That's the ground floor. All right. Now, a little bit about Roy here. He came to Butte in 1951.
Oh.
Which is still very early to go to Montana. That's that's out there, man.
Still a lot of wood building.
Wow. Yeah, that is crazy. It looks like Deadwood still, probably.
Yeah.
He had served. He's from Kentucky, and also he'd been in Arizona. He lived in a lot of states, and in most of them, he also lived in their prisons for a while, too. He's had some problems, Roy. Yeah.
Roy is a rambling man.
He's a rambling, hustling, cow-roping, fucking horse-thieving kind of a cat here. He served 3.5 years in the Kentucky state prison and 5 years in an Arizona state prison.
Jesus.
Both times on armed robbery convictions.
Roy.
Jesus.
Get a job, Roy.
Holy fuck, man. He was 50 years old doing that shit. What are you doing, Roy? Get your act together, man. He was arrested also in Butte once he moved there, and he moved to Butte to try to chill out.
Really get on the straight and narrow.
Straighten myself out here. Yeah. There's nobody else around. I can't fuck up. So he got arrested in Butte in 1955 on a charge of discharging a firearm within city limits.
What?
He might have just been doing some yippee-ki-yay, I'm a cowboy type thing. Woohoo.
Drunk shooting at the moon.
Yeah, I think maybe it's a little moon, drunken moon shooting, which is really very common. He was doing the moon shoot boogie. That's all it was. Common that type of night.
Exactly what popped in my head.
Moon shooting boogie. Yeah, take that, fucker.
Curly Bill Tombstone,
yeah. Absolutely. That's what he was doing, the moon shooting boogie. He was on opium, though. That was a different.
Yeah, that's true.
This guy could be on opium, too.
We don't know.
But he worked as a miner, okay? Yeah. Since 55, he's been working as a miner. Everybody in Butte, all the men seem to be miners. Because other people we'll talk about in the story, also miners, fellow miners.
I imagine most people in Montana at this time were mining.
Everybody was, There wasn't much else to do. So he's mining, and on April 6th, 1965, so about a year before we're going to talk about, he just up and quit one day. Just stopped and said, I ain't mining no more. He's done.
Too old for this shit.
Well, he said it was a combination of, he's 59 years old at the time when he quit, was number one. And he had physical ailments like arthritis, silicosis. What the fuck is that?
What is that? That sounds, start turning into silicone?
I don't know. That's an old-timey disease. I saw silicosis. So made me think of cirrhosis, but that's not what it is. It's
no, it's worse. Maybe he's ingesting too much silicone.
Was silicone even invented in 1966? I don't even know. Who knows? And he also had emphysema. When you add all those all those things together, you go, well, he was a miner too, so you could not smoke. And I mean, miners would get the black lung
all kinds
and
of horrible shit. Yeah.
So who knows what the hell was in his lungs? But I would say this particular triad of things wrong with him is called the too old for this shit triad, right?
That is generally hard living triad.
General minor problem, minor syndrome.
He quit because of 1966. That's why he'd quit.
I'm going to be 60 goddamn years old. So he was drawing disability from Social Security after that.
Sure.
But not making a whole lot of money off of that, obviously. So
right. He probably didn't pay much in, and he's been in prison for some time, so he wasn't paying during that time, obviously.
Yeah. Well, also, he wanted to quit because he has hobbies that he wanted to get to, too. You know, as you're 60 years old, you kind of, you want to find something to stretch out, tinker.
Clocks. Yeah.
Fix like maybe make cuckoo clocks, do like make fly fishing out in your shed like Bo Jackson, something like that. But his particular hobby was drinking as much as humanly possible, just as much alcohol as his body could possibly ingest in the times before he passed out at night.
I like you, Roy.
That's pretty
good guy.
That's how Roy decided to spend his days. But that chilled him out a lot. He wasn't discharging firearms or anything. He was just drunk. Maybe he wasn't angry from mining, so that's good.
That is a good point. Maybe waking up in the morning with a little less joint pain made him smile a little bigger.
Now, on the second floor is friends of theirs. Well, was friends and sort of is friends. Let's talk about this. This is where things get a little weird. All right.
Friends of Roy and Mary?
Yeah, kind of. Sort of. One of the people is, even though they're married, I think, as the court documents put here. One is, let's talk about Jesse Villalobos. Okay. He's 45 years old. Old Jesse here called him Jess. Everybody calls him old Jess.
Sure.
He's a miner as well, obviously. He has a wife named Anna Villalobos. But the thing is, and this is right from the court document, quote, there is some question as to whether Anna was actually the wife of Jess or isn't, or they were divorced. So we don't know if they're actually were married and are now divorced. We're never married or are currently married in this situation. We're not sure.
But they live together.
Yeah. Even the state
we know
of
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Even the Superior Court of Montana couldn't figure it out. So who are we to delve into this shit? They had access to way more documents than we do. So
they've got a marriage license database, hopefully.
Apparently not. So Anna, sometimes they call her Ann, too. So I don't know.
Sure.
Well, I don't know which one it is.
It's short. Yeah.
It's short. Well, Ann is one syllable, so we'll go with Ann. She's 48, 3 years older than Jess here. Ann is employed at the State Hospital at Warm Springs. That's where she works. And Mary Brooks also works at a hospital as well.
Yeah.
So the women work in hospitals. The men work in the mines. They get injured in the mines, get taken to the hospital. Their wives fix them up. That's how it works.
Okay.
So now they live in the second floor. outside of their second floor apartment, there's an outside stairway on the west side of the building and a narrow inside stairway near the kitchen of the apartment. So there's two different ways to go upstairs. Okay. So you know, okay?
Yeah.
Smaller one, bigger one. All right. Got so, yes. Now, there's been some beef between Jess and Roy.
Okay.
Here's the weird part, though, okay? After this beef they have the previous New Year's Eve, Jess doesn't want Roy around, doesn't like Roy, doesn't want him in the apartment. But Anne still hangs out with Roy, and they're good friends. His wife, yeah, Jess's wife. So this pisses Jess off. Not only is I don't like this guy and he lives below me and now he's hanging out with me all the time, right, but my wife likes him and hangs out with him. Not only that, when they go out to like bars, the wife will buy him drinks and shit like that. So he's like, he's spending our fucking money on this bum. Like he's just, now he just hates Roy, you know, can't stand him. The previous New Year's Eve of 65 into 66, Villalobos had, Jess had wrestled Roy to the floor up in Villalobos' apartment, where, you know, Roy was an invited guest of a New Year's Eve party. At that point, too, Villalobos also attacked another guy who was hanging out with Roy that night.
What
so
the fuck?
Jess Villalobos freaked out and started fighting people in his own apartment there. So that's what's been going on. Jess doesn't want Roy around, but he's around anyway, drinking with the wife all the time. So
it's a little reckless, that Jess.
He's a little bit reckless here. Well, I mean, he's dealing with a reckless guy, too. So everybody, these are minors. I mean.
and his live-in whatever likes
possible.
The guy.
Yeah. I mean, minors, not only is tomorrow not guaranteed, it's kind of mocking you, as a matter of fact. It's just, if it does get there.
It's kind of giving you the finger right when you wake up.
If it does get there, it's going to hurt. So it's all bad. So enter another fella here. Benito Sandoval. They call him Benny. Okay.
Yeah.
Old Benny Sandoval, because nobody wants to go by Benito after Mussolini ruined that for you.
It's also a lot of goddamn syllables.
Yeah, that's the other thing. And it's only six letters, so it's a lot of syllables. Letters.
And it's only three, but it feels like so many more.
Yeah, it's very Benito. It's a lot.
He's really stumbling. It's clumsy.
Benny is a friend of Jess Villalobos here. August the 26th, he saw Jess Villalobos, Benny did, saw him very early in the morning at the Board of Trade bar.
Yeah.
So at the bar early in the morning, which is a great place to do this. They played pool and drank beer for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then they went to a restaurant and ate. Try to know, sop it up a little. From there, they went to Jess Villalobos' apartment, and they arrived about 5 a.m. Oh, man, his wife who works at the hospital must love him showing up shit-hammered at 5 a.m. with some scumbag friend of his from the bar. She must love that.
It's a nice time to, yeah.
Thanks a lot, asshole.
I'm early. You're damn right you're early.
Yeah. And when they got there, they didn't even, like, chill out. They had a pint of whiskey. And they drank that.
We're going to keep drinking at 5 a.m.
After they've had their post-drinking breakfast. So they drink a pint of whiskey, and then they go to sleep. Mm-hmm. All right? So they're sleeping here on the in the room like we're talking about here. So they're sleeping. And Jess, obviously, when he's been drinking, his wife wouldn't let him in the apartment. So rather than go to Jess's apartment and sleep, they weren't allowed in, so he had to go downstairs at Jay Smith's apartment.
Oh, Jay's place.
So they had to go down there and sleep. This is like a dorm or something here.
It's it's fascinating. I can't imagine being this welcome at so many places.
Everybody, revolving doors in everybody's place.
It's too much.
So around noon, the two of these two woke up, Benny and Jess, and they went upstairs to Jess's apartment. Now he's allowed in once he's... hasn't been out drinking all night, which the wife is smart. She's like, my hard-drinking minor husband is getting home. It's fucking 5 o'clock in the morning with his shit-faced friend. Let's not let him in.
To continue drinking. Yeah. That's the other part.
Well, I mean, at the very least, I'm going to save myself cleaning up a bunch of piss. That's because someone's pissing somewhere.
That kind of drinking, when you fall asleep, it's not even sleep. It's just a unconscious digesting of alcohol is all that is. It's not good.
Your body's shutting down because it can't do it anymore. So once they get there, as soon as they get there, Benny goes out and buys a fifth of whiskey. Okay.
Good Lord.
Got a hair of the dog, you know what I mean?
Benny.
So then the three of these people here, we got Benny, we got Jess.
Jay.
And no, Jay's back down in his apartment.
Oh,
we're up.
Okay.
They went up to their apartment. Now, the only three people here are Benny, Benny, Jess. So Benny and the Jess is here.
Benny and the Jess and Ann.
Benny and the Jess and Ann, Jess's wife. Okay. Those three proceed to drink the fifth of whiskey.
My God, you guys.
At noon. At noon. Okay. And they've all just woken up. This isn't like.
It's a hell of a day, man.
This isn't like they got up at 5, they had a full shift at work, got off, and now they're drinking. No, this is noon, and they just woke up.
This is three people that need therapy.
Yeah. Three people drinking a fifth of whiskey at noon is disturbing. That is disturbing. You want to get more disturbing. By 3 o'clock, Benny goes out and buys a second fifth and returns, and they continue drinking that.
We hammered a fifth in 3 hours, passing the bottle.
Yep.
We're not too drunk yet.
Nope. Let's get another at 3. What do you think they're going to be like at 10 tonight? Holy shit.
What do you think they're going to be like at 6?
Oh, drooling, throwing up tacos. It's going to be disgusting.
That's dinner time, 6. I have not heard one word of we're going out to eat yet.
No. They did go out for breakfast at like 4 in the morning. But after that, no one's like, let's get some food in our stomachs before we start drinking 2/5 of whiskey. No one suggests that at all. Never.
Wow.
So about 4 o'clock p.m., you know, 3/4 of the way into the second fifth, they got to be shit hammered. Benny and Ann decide that they think there's a leak in the gas pipe in the building.
Oh, God. We've got these two.
Do you smell it? I smell something. I don't know what it is. It's your breath. Like, that's what it is.
Sounds like Jess breathed out hard and then blamed it on the gas pipe because he's embarrassed.
Jesus Christ. So they decide to go downstairs to check if the gas pipe is leaking.
Oh, God.
And they run into Roy Brooks down there,
right?
Obviously. Mm-hmm. Now, Brooks, like we said, is friends with Ann, so they like hanging out. So, Jesus Christ, Brooks had just gotten back. He'd been hanging out with a Mrs. Felter, and he had just been at her house playing pinochle and getting shit-faced. So everybody's early afternoon drinking here. What is going on?
Board games.
Peanuts,
board games and
it's a card
booze
game.
At 3 in the afternoon.
Cards and booze is a fine midnight thing, but not at fucking 2:30. So Roy was, what everybody said, drunk but able to walk.
Yeah.
And he was anxious to get home before his wife got back from her job at the Silver Bow General Hospital, which is the county. It's in Silver Bow. So he wanted to get home and I guess not be in trouble for not being home because he's out drinking with some other lady. So
getting hammered with Mrs. Felter.
Mrs. Felton. Did you Felter? Felton? Felton. Felter. No, it's Felter. Did you Felter?
Yeah.
I Felter. So Roy later will say that he meets Benny and Ann, you know, when this is going on. And he had already had a pint of whiskey that day, and he was a little drunk.
Okay.
You know, a little drunk. A pint just gets him a little tipsy. So Roy returns with Benny and Ann to the apartment where Jess is, back to the Villalobos apartment. So Jess isn't happy about that, obviously. But they hang out, and they finish the second fifth of whiskey. Why not? This show, Small Town Murder, is sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp.com.
Absolutely. And maybe your social battery. Where are you monitoring that right now? You drained down? Too much socializing from holidays? Not enough? Maybe some people hole up in the winter?
Sure.
And
yeah.
Therapy is the thing. Therapy can help give you some self-awareness so you can build a social life that's not going to drain you or leave you wanting more here. So we totally are 100% advocates of therapy here. It's great for you. There's a million things it can help you with, and this is one of them, because social stuff is something that it's really hard not to struggle with nowadays, especially even social media mixed in the mix. It's difficult. It really is.
Overwhelming.
Therapy can help, and if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
Yeah.
We very much recommend it. Entirely online, designed to be convenient and flexible. It's suited to your schedule. Mm-hmm. You fill out this brief questionnaire. They very quickly match you with a licensed therapist, and no additional charge. You can switch therapists at any time. which is a big deal because that's sometimes you're not vibing with somebody and you need to vibe with somebody. No additional charge for that at all. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/smalltownmurder.
And now back to the show.
Hey, everybody, just going to take a quick break from the show to tell you a little bit about the safest sponsor that's ever been, Simply Safe.
Oh, SimplySafe.com. SimpliSafe.com.
Springtime's coming here. So you got the spring, you got fresh air, fresh starts, and you clean your house. That's all fresh. It's also the perfect time to give a fresh look at Simply Safe home security. Make sure your newly cleaned, nice house is secure. That's important.
Well protected, yeah.
It's the only security system that Jimmy and I will use, and we recommend it highly. We both have it on not only our studios, our houses, anything we have that needs protection. Simply Safe is the way to go. It's so easy to install that even we can do it. You guys will love it because you'll feel secure. You will not be small town murdered in your own home is what it is if you have Simply Safe because they're going to protect you. They're trusted by experts. It was named the best home security systems for 2024 by U.S. News and World Report, and Newsweek awarded Simply Safe the best customer service in home security. Simply Safe has given us and our many listeners real peace of mind, and I want you to have it too. We want you to feel good. Get 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Just visit simplysafe.com/small. That's SimplySafe, SimpliSafe.com/small. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
Now back to the show.
They pound that. So the whiskey runs out, so I would say it's like 4:30 at this point. I would say, okay, we've drank enough for now. But Benny says, no, I'm going to go back to the store. And since there's more of us now, I'll get 2/5 of whiskey. They're going to be 4/5 of whiskey into this day before before a 9-to-5er even gets out of work. This is wild.
Unbelievable.
This is a crazy style kind of life right here.
Could have saved a lot of walking buying a handle this morning.
Fuck me. That's what I mean, too. How would you like to be the guy who works at the store going, whoop, here he comes again. Little drunker every time he comes in.
Isn't it crazy that a bartender can cut you off, but not the guy that just sold him four fucking fifths?
Not my problem.
While he wanders in more and more hammered.
Well, he's not drinking it in there, tearing the place up, so you go home and do whatever you want.
Yeah, I guess you can't prove he put it all in him.
Not my problem. Yeah, maybe he's having a giant party. Maybe there's 100 people back there. He's making a huge punch. We don't fucking know.
He's only had 2 drinks. He just can't handle booze.
Wow, this is crazy, man. This is just a lot. So, about 4:30, Mary gets home from her shift at the hospital. Imagine you get home from your shift at the hospital.
Christ.
You're stone sober coming in from a shift where you went in at 7:30 in the morning to the hospital. Yeah. You are.
To see the worst parts of humanity.
Hey, Mary, how's it going? Hey, Mary's here. Sweet. Look at her. Hey, Mary.
I have an 86-year-old shit on my neck. Can I take a shower?
Not before you give me a kiss, because this sounds good right now. Anybody else hungry? Like, I'm hungry.
Fuck.
Holy shit.
He returns with the 2/5, and they start to drink. Hey, everybody's drinking. Mary jumps right in, too. Well, why not? God. What the fuck is she going to do? She starts drinking. So everybody's getting hammered. And shit-faced and, doing all that. Mary's the least drunk because she just started. Everybody else has been drinking for hours.
A lot of catching up to do.
Yeah. Now, this day, like we said, there was New Year's Eve. There'd been hostilities between Jess and Roy. The previous day, also, Jess and Roy had jawed back and forth at each other, had some words. No physical altercation, but they had some words. So there's a lot going on here. The words the day before, you want to know what the argument was over?
What was over?
Okay, well, the argument was over $17. So, there was a...
Who owes who? Roy or Jess?
Jess is saying that Mary, or not Mary, that Ann spent $17 on him at the taverns in the last few days. And my wife
Roy's
spent
bar
that money.
Tab is what we're
arguing
about.
Exactly. Oh, hey, Norm, give me over that $17. Yeah.
And Roy's like, it was a gift. And he's like, no, it's not. Motherfucker, my wife is not giving you nothing. And they're yelling at
you
each other.
You want it back? Head on down to the bar and take it out of the ice trough.
You can go down there and you can drink it off. So how's that?
Open your mouth. I'll give it right back.
It's coming. It's all coming. A lot of it's on my curtains from the morning.
What do you want to bet? He said you want it back. Open up.
Open up. So this
Open
is
your
a
pocket. I'll put it in there.
But Roy said that Jess actually owes him money. So this is how this happened. My wife's been buying your shit. Well, you owe me money. So $17, by the way, in 2023 money is $156.97. So
that's a good point. Yeah.
$17 is not now. It's like very trivial. It's not right. Nothing, but it's $17 is not something to physically fight a person over nowadays. Whereas $157, you might start fighting people. So
$157 in bar tab is fuck it. That's a lot.
That's a lot. It's a shitload of drinking.
Yeah.
So Benny Sandoval here, he said that they argued on and off. They kept on and off over the course of this drinking party. Everything would be fine, and then Jess and Roy would start yipping and yapping at each other. And finally, several times, Jess tells Roy to leave. Well, why don't you get the fuck out then? And he's like, I will. I don't need your shitty apartment to drink in. And then they just keep sitting there drinking. And they argue some more, and then Jess goes, I thought I told you to leave. And then they argue some more.
The fuck out of my house.
It's ridiculous.
I see Dwight Yoakam from Sling.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody
and then calming down. I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry if you motherfuckers weren't just so fucking stupid to not listen to my shit and what the fuck I'm trying to tell you. Maybe I wouldn't have to get so angry, but nope, I'm sorry. What I meant, I'm sorry. No. They said that The argument varied in intensity, too. They'd be screaming at each other, then it would stop, and then there would just be, well, you motherfucker, yeah, you fucking son of a bitch, and then it would just
Everybody's
stop.
Seen this fight. This is the drunk rage.
It keeps going. At one point, Jess went into the kitchen, and Benny said that he thought maybe that Jess went in to get a knife out of the kitchen and started toward Roy. And Benny said to Jess, hey, don't cause trouble. Come on, man. Let's not get crazy. And then Jess apparently stopped and went back into the kitchen. Now, Benny said he never actually saw the knife, but he thought he might have had one. He thought that's what he went in the kitchen for. And he was like, rather than have, Benny stab this guy in the neck, or rather than have Jess stab this guy in the neck, I'll try to calm the situation down. Okay. So and now Anne, Jess's wife, who was in the kitchen most of the time, said she didn't have any knowledge ever of her husband grabbing a knife at that point. So
no knife.
She didn't know. And Roy had no idea any of this happened. He didn't see any of this happen, any of the arguments behind his back, any of that shit. So at various times during the afternoon, this is the other thing. Look at Roy. Roy and Jess are arguing back and forth. Then Roy would stop and just start like dancing in a weird way around the room. Everyone said he was acting crazy and dancing in a strange way.
Look, this is a retired man. He's having a great time.
Yeah, he'd just get up and start doing fucking weird old dance moves and shit. And they're like, what the fuck are you doing? 2 minutes ago, you were arguing. This guy just almost stabbed you in the back. Like, what is happening? And he's just yippity-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, doing some little cowboy dance.
Is he singing with it, going, I stole $17 from Jess?
Maybe.
I drink your money.
He's holding cash up in the air. He's got $17. Yeah!
Just wrinkling it.
Wrinkling it. Yeah! Makes it rain down, and he picks it back up again. It's my money, bitch. And he dances around with it a little more. So he's dancing around and doing all sorts of shit. At different times, they would just fucking start arguing and then intermittently dancing. At one point here, too, Jess told Roy that I'm going to have you arrested. You get out or I'll have you arrested. And everyone's like, whoa, hey, calm down.
Calm down.
Jess, let's not get the cops involved. We've all been drinking since noon. That's going to totally harsh my buzz, bro.
Jesus. I'm gonna be real sober. I see that copper badge come through that door.
Imagine you're that cop who walks into that scene. Everyone's can tell you what happened. Okay, hold on. And he's like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Sir, stop dancing, please.
He's dancing around, four bottles of booze clinking all over the ground. He's dancing, kicking one, clink, clank, clank. You'd just close the fucking door, go back and get in your car and drive away, would you not? Would you stay there if you were a cop?
Holding her head, shaking it while she leans over a bookcase.
Or just chugging whiskey trying to catch up, one or the other. I'm almost there.
Still in her Nurse Ratched outfit.
Woo! She's fucking pounding. It's a disaster.
I saw three people code today.
Oh, I seen some shit. So, yeah, they're dancing around. They're doing all this shit. Benny said that another argument starts, and Benny said he got tired of hearing it, and he just curled up in a chair and went to sleep, because he's shit hammered.
Yeah.
He said he woke up sometime later when he heard some noise, Benny does. Upon awakening, he looks over, rubbing his eyes, and first things he sees here next to him is Jess sitting next to him, slumped over, bleeding.
Oh, God.
He's like, uh-oh. And then he looked over and saw he's in a whiskey haze. I mean,
yeah.
You wake up from a short nap after drinking 4/5 of whiskey.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea what's going on, where you are, if that's puke or whatever on your clothes. You have no idea.
Jeff, you bleeding or is that
what
puke?
The fuck? He at that point heard Anne screaming and saw her wrestling with Roy. So this has turned really weird. He said that Roy had a knife in his hand while Anne was hanging off him trying to disarm him. And then Roy ran from the apartment, threw Anne off of him, and ran away. Okay, leaving his wife behind in there, which is even crazier.
Then for yourself, I'm out.
Yeah. So Anne, she said she had spent most of the afternoon in the kitchen preparing a meal. She's going to make a big dinner for everybody. It's always ruined by a stabbing. You know, it's just the way it is.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, apparently so. So she said that Jess had entered the kitchen several times to get ice from the fridge, but never saw him pick up a knife. She also said that sometime after Mary, Roy's wife, joined the party, that Jess told Roy to leave multiple times, and that Roy had started to do so, except he said, come on, Mary, let's go. They don't want us here. We don't need to be here. Come on, Mary. And Mary said, fuck you. You go. I'm staying here drinking.
Oh.
So Mary wanted to hang out. She didn't want to leave the party. Just because you got kicked out doesn't mean I have to leave.
Go give them $17 and everything will be fine.
It's wow. So he then left the apartment, but then returned a few minutes later, like, Mary!
He thought she was fucking playing, and he left and looked over his shoulder, and he's like, she was not kidding. She's going to stay and drink.
So when Roy comes back in, that's when Jess says, I'm going to call the police. Okay. And that's when Jess went toward the telephone to actually call the police, as Roy went toward him to try to block him. They ended up meeting at the telephone. Like that's where they physically met up with each other. And then Anne said she saw Roy, quote, strike out at Jess.
Yeah.
And then Jess slumped over to the floor. She said she didn't see anything in his hand, but the angle she was at, she just saw it looked like he punched him in the neck or punched him in the side. Then he fell over. So she, he's got sharp hands, and so he's got some fucking Wolverine claws. Yeah, take that. So Anne said that Roy then moved to his wife and said he was going to kill her too.
Oh?
He said, I already killed Jess. Might as well fucking kill you too. That was what he told her. So she was like, holy shit, Jesus Christ. And if I'm anybody else in that apartment, I go, well, I'm checking my watch going, it's about time. Because then he's going to go, I already killed Jess and I already killed my wife. Now you're fucking dead. Because why not?
What do
I
have to lose? Benny's next.
Benny in the next at this point. Yeah. So
I'm going to get Benny right in the neck.
I'm going to get him good. Benny in the neck. Bop, bop. Bat, 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 bat. You know, he's drunk.
Betty! Betty! I'm going to stab you in the neck. Bat, bat, boop, bat, bat. Woo! Bat, 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 bat.
And then he's dancing around while he's doing that. So there he then what happens is Anne comes to the aid of Mary.
Yeah.
And Benny, Mary, and Anne all wrestle Roy and try to wrestle the knife out of his hand. And they push him out of the apartment. And in the melee, Jesus Christ, in the melee, Roy throws Mary down the steps.
Oh, my God.
So she goes tumbling down the fucking stairs down to the first floor. In this melee, okay? Not funny, but the it wasn't even on purpose. He wasn't like, throw Mary down the stairs. It wasn't any of that. It was
he's too drunk for that.
No, they were just all wrestling, and somehow he, like, pushed her, and she ended up going down the stairs, which he was trying to kill her, so, I mean, it wasn't like he wouldn't push her down the stairs. So it's only funny because all these people would be really dead anyway. That's why it's the only reason. So Anne goes and goes to her husband, to Jess, to see if he's okay, because she just thought Roy punched him, and she sees that he's bleeding. She starts screaming, and that's when, you know, Benny's waking up, throwing people downstairs, trying to help that. She says she tried to wake up Jess, but he seemed dead. She said that Roy had told her not to use the phone, and then she didn't see him anymore because they got outside and Mary fell down the steps. So then she said she never saw Roy again until after the police arrived. She didn't call the cops, too. Somebody else called the cops because this isn't over yet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Jay and Mary Smith, they're downstairs, another Mary. Yeah. Oh, all right. Boy. They occupy the lower floor apartment. Now, on this day, Jay said that he didn't know what the hell happened upstairs. He just heard a knock on his kitchen door. He opened the kitchen door. Hey, what's going on? And Roy charges into the room swinging a knife.
Oh, my God. Stabbing his... burst, that guy has nothing to do with this.
Nothing to do with shit. He's just the guy downstairs who also hangs out down there. Comes in swinging the knife saying, I just killed Jess. I'll kill everybody. I'm going to kill you. And literally slashing at him with a giant kitchen knife, a serrated fucking 5-inch blade kitchen knife.
Yeah.
Just a huge knife, a big steak knife, hacking away at him, saying he's going to kill him. Smith said that Roy stabbed at him at least 3 or 4 times and then was, like, you know, waving it back and forth, too. Smith somehow tackled him, probably because he's shit-faced and, you know, probably not
drunk.
Great with the knife. Yeah,
he's a 66-year-old drunk man.
And Jay's like, you know, at least not that drunk, probably.
Right.
So Jay Smith tackles him and ends up the wife calls the police. Okay, so that's when the police are finally notified. It's not over yet, though. They fight during all this. And Jay Smith knocks the knife out of Roy's hand, and it flies under the stove.
Oh, fantastic.
Then they get up, and they start fighting. Jay Smith punches Roy. Roy flies through the screen door and knocks himself outside. So this has turned into, like, a real people flying downstairs, people bursting through screen doors. This is fucking wild.
He hit him good, though. Super Smash Brothered him out the
room. Got him good.
That's amazing.
That's what happens when an arthritic 66-year-old man who's had 3/5 of whiskey fucking gets punched in through a door. He flies through it, man.
The siliconitis.
Yeah. That's some Old West shit right there. If they had, like, a big picture window, he'd have gone bursting through that. So the police arrive about 7:45 p.m. This has been a long day here. Yeah. When they arrive, the first thing they see, because they get there and they hear, you know, up on the second floor, blah, blah, blah. They show up. First thing they see is Roy's wife at the bottom of the stairs on her back with her feet up in the air because she had been knocked down the stairs and she was, like, coming to at that point. I'm not even kidding. They were like, hello? Are you the victim? And she's like, somebody's worse up there.
I'm one of them, but there's more.
It's worse upstairs, okay? Just go. So they end up finding Roy in his apartment. He's just hanging out.
Okay.
So the cops come in, say they're answering the complaint of a disturbance. And they, like I said, they find Mrs. Brooks at the bottom of the stairs. She gets sent off to the hospital. They arrest Brooks on suspicion of causing a disturbance.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, they find out that obviously there's been a murder.
Yeah.
and all that kind of thing here. When Mary was at the bottom of the steps and they picked her up, she told them, I'm a little shook up right now.
No shit.
Yeah.
You just left the hospital and we're sending you right back.
Right back. Oh, I'm back again. You forget something? Yeah, I forgot a cast on my leg that I need now.
Yeah.
So they, in their opinion, they said, and this is interesting, I don't know what the cops' criteria on this is or how they're judging it, but they said that in their opinion, Brooks was not drunk at the time they arrested him.
How drunk is everybody in Butte?
Dude, imagine you're getting pulled over. This isn't that drunk, so they don't think he's drunk? He'd have been, Roy can drive still, he's fine.
Guy's been drinking since one.
Yeah, in multiple places and everything else. So when the cops found Ann Villalobos, she was sitting at the kitchen table, and Jess was lying dead a few feet away in a pool of his own blood. God, and Ann was sitting there like distraught.
Shell-shocked, yeah.
Yeah. So they found the knife under the stove in the police apartment, in the Smith apartment by the police. Yeah, so it got hit and just got knocked under there. They said that that medically matches the murder weapon, could have been the murder weapon. It quote, fits well into the wounds in the body of Jess Villalobos.
Jesus. Ew, I don't like the way they say that.
That's the autopsy report. It fits well. That almost sounds like he's like, let me see if I stick it in there. Yeah, that's the one. Like, ew, what are you doing?
Did it go in like a knife block and it just stayed in?
There we go. All right. Oh, it's a perfect fit.
That's the one.
Like Jesus. It also had blood on it that's the same blood type as Jess, obviously, no DNA in the 60s. So his wife here, Ann, she testified later on that the knife didn't come from her kitchen as far as she knew and didn't belong to her husband. So they're like, he brought his own kitchen knife over there, which is a strange thing.
Carry. Yeah.
To go to your neighbor's to drink with your wife? Yeah, I'm going to might as well bring this kitchen knife with me. I might need to stab somebody.
Yeah. Well, you bring a cephalon with you?
What the at 2 in the afternoon?
Weird.
There was also no fingerprints on the knife, no discernible fingerprints. So I don't know if that was just poor fingerprint person or what, but
yeah, or it's just all smeared and ruined and not nothing that you can get.
Got cat hair all over it and shit from underneath the
probably stove. Some fucking bacon grease under there.
Bacon grease,
it off. Yeah.
Dust bunnies and shit.
A 1966 stove. I don't know when that shit was moved.
Shit's leaking all over the
it's
place.
Been there since 48.
Oh yeah, it's barely post-war. So Ann tells police that Brooks left and came back with a butcher knife with an 8-inch blade. That's what she tells police. She said that his wife tried to restrain him, Brooks, but that he shoved her down the stairs after that. She had a broken arm from falling down the stairs,
good
by
Lord.
The way. So the autopsy says that, yes, this medium-sized kitchen knife with a 5.5-inch blade and a 3/4-inch wide blade with a serrated edge and a sharp point. That's how they describe it. That's a steak knife. The guy who does the autopsy said that that knife obviously fits into the wounds and said the wound was about 5 inches deep, so right to the hilt, with one in the chest and the other in the upper part of the back. So he shanked him twice.
Got him two times.
The front wound went right through the heart, they said, and killed him pretty fast. The other ranged the lower body, so just kind of did a whole sweep in there and really got him good. The death was definitely caused by the chest wound, and he found no contributory causes of any kind. It was just a knife through the fucking heart that did it. A chemical test of blood from the body showed that his alcohol level, want to guess what Villalobos' alcohol was, his BAC?
Oh, is it a 0.26?
It is a 0.27.
Hey!
That's pretty good.
Do I know
not
my
bad.
Drunks or
you
what?
You know your drunks. 0.2. He's like, let's see, 4/5, but it was over the course of 5 hours. I'm going to say 180-pound man, essentially, over 5 hours. Let's see if he just had a snack, maybe some chips, something like that, walked around slightly. 2.26. The hillbilly cop should just bring Jimmy around. They don't need a breathalyzer. How much you drinking?
Oh boy, it's 0.26.
When you start drinking, how much you had to eat today, Jimmy?
Oh boy, you are a 0.26 if my name ain't Jimmy Wissman.
And Jimmy just shakes his head, and they go, "Well, turn around, sir. No, the breathalyzer says you're shit face. Sorry."
Hook him up.
Hook him on up now. I like that shit. Clean out the holler, Jimmy. Yeah. So They said, yes, in the advanced stage of intoxication. And so, yes, they also found some evidence that there may have been two knife thrusts to the chest and, not, and also one to the back. So it's 2 to 3 stab wounds. They can't quite tell. So I don't know if the MRI and that kind of technology is not quite the same. So they the knife had been taken apparently from the Smith's kitchen.
Apparently, he
went down there and stole a knife, which is crazy. He didn't have any knives, apparently. So,
that's weird. How are you going to retire? How are you going to quit working without a knife? A set of knives?
I'm sorry. If you don't have a steak knife to hang your hat on, you can't retire. You got to hang in there until you at least get a set of Cutcos that you can do something with.
How are you going to put a bow on your working career? You're going to get a knife in this house.
He expected when he retired they'd give him a set of steak knives, I think was the parting gift he was hoping for, but they didn't give it to him.
I am done with this mine. Give me my steak knife.
Give me my steak. What? Now, I heard when you retire, you get steak knives. So they talked to Roy. Roy is willing to talk. They sit him down and they say, Roy? And Roy said, yeah, there's been some trouble between me and Jess the previous day. He said, no arguments between us this day, though, which isn't true. He also said that Jess never told me to leave the apartment during the drinking party. That never happened.
Okay.
Which we know is not true. He did say that he had quite a lot to drink during the day. He said at one point, though, he wasn't kicked out, but that Jess started laughing at him. For what? I don't know.
You're dancing, silly sir.
That's what he was doing. He was dancing around, and he said that at that point he thought he better go because he was being laughed at. So that's when he called his wife to come with him. And the two of them started to leave. All of this is not true. He does say, though, that his wife was walking in front of him, and she stunned. This is his way. They go, well, when'd you throw your wife down the stairs? He goes, oh, no. We were both leaving of my own volition. I wasn't thrown out of a drunk's apartment. I was leaving because I wanted to go. Yeah. She was in front of me. You know, I wasn't paying much attention. She stopped short.
Yeah,
I wasn't looking, bumped into her, boom, 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 down the stairs. That's how that happened.
Holy shit.
Three people weren't trying to wrestle a knife from me, and then I tossed my wife down the stairs. It was just a total, like, I was looking back like, yeah, we'll see you next time. Oh, geez, I ran into her, and then she tumbled.
You see, officer, you know in traffic the light turns yellow and you accelerate, but the car in front of you hits the brakes?
That's what happened. Boom, pow. I didn't even see it. Oh, and you were looking back at a chick's tits on the side of the road. It's one of them. And then you just bang right into him.
Expect her to keep on going.
He accidentally knocked her down the stairs. Mm-hmm. He remembers that he went, oh no, my poor wife, and ran down the stairs to try to come to her aid. And he says he remembers nothing after that until the police arrived, though. Nothing. Now, the judge in the case says, well, remember or not, you're held without bond because holy shit, you're a moron. I like his the way the paper describes him coming to court. Brooks appeared in court wearing a soiled white sleeveless undershirt and blue jeans. His left eye was discolored and lacerated.
He showed up in arms out.
Yeah, this is what
suns out, guns out kind of day.
This was his drinking outfit. That's why this is his drinking gear. That's what he puts on.
With a shiner and a gash.
Yep, the shiner is from being wrestled around with. So sure, his eye, too. I'll post it on social media. It's all fucked up looking. So he's charged with first-degree murder, but the county attorney does not ask for the death penalty, though.
Really?
So they're not going to go for the death penalty because they think it's one drunk minor knifing another drunk minor. And they're if we killed every drunk minor who knifed another drunk minor, our electric bill would be out of control in this state. We can't do it.
We'd have to burn so much coal. We'd have to mine just for the electric chair.
Mm-hmm. It's too much, I'm telling you right now.
Just to keep it fired up.
To keep it fired up. Well, it takes more electricity to start it back up again, so you just got to keep it running.
Keep it humming.
Keep it on. I mean, shit. So the trial, by the way, they then give him a bail, and his bond is $17,000, and he can't get out on a murder charge.
What's with the 17 with
this guy? That's what I mean. I wonder if it's $17, $17,000. I was like, whoa. Well, let's see if he gets 17 years in jail. What do you say?
17 death sentences.
17 fucking life terms. So a prosecutor in the opening statement said that this was a willful, premeditated act with malice because he went and got the knife and all that. He left and came back. And they call their witnesses up. Obviously, there's the people they call the narrator, the coroner up there. They also, this is funny, they call up the guy who did the surveyor who prepared the floor plans of the apartment to, like, have a whole, you know, okay, this is
a diagram of what he built.
To have a map. Benny Sandoval's kind of the key witness, even though he was sleeping during most of this, the actual attack that happened.
Well, you got to understand, James, he's the only other man in the building or in that room with a penis, and you can't trust those pesky vaginas.
Well, let's see. Out of the four people in the room, two of them had tits, so we need to discount what the hell they're
talking
about.
So, Benny, you're the most credible here.
So, you're the one man whose brain wasn't just completely addled with tit milk. So, what was it? So she.
Also, he's the instigator of this. He got all these people hammered.
He said, come on over. No, it's cool. He said everybody was drunk, obviously, and everything like that. He said, yes, I did make three trips for whiskey, bringing 2/5 the last time. Everybody was drinking it. I fell asleep. I found my friend bent over with blood on him when I woke up. I fled the apartment. He said he left the apartment, fled and called the police also. So multiple people called the police here. You know, they also called Jay Smith, who tells everything that happened there. Uh-huh. He said, because Jay Smith was like, what's going on? He had no clue. He just said Roy barged in and said, quote, I just killed Jess and now I'm going to kill you. They describe Smith as a muscular man of about 35. That's why Roy has a fucked up eye at this point.
Oh, he did it, huh?
Yeah, he started whooping his ass. A blow from Smith discolored one of Brooks' eyes, is what people said. He said that Brooks, quote, looked mad when he came in and appeared to be a bit intoxicated or partially drunk. Wow, he's got some kind of tolerance. He said that he seemed quite angry and not behaving normally. Now, unless it's his normal thing to, when you unlock the door, he barges through it swinging a fucking steak knife at you back and forth. I'd call that a little not behaving normally, probably. So he said that he, you know, forced Brooks out, and that's how that worked there. Now, the defense, their whole thing is to discredit all the other witnesses, saying they're all drunks. How can you trust them? They were all drinking all day. They don't know what the fuck happened there. Anybody could have stabbed anybody. Let's just call it a wash. Right. You know, that's what it is. And also, they said, well, considering Brooks's age and poor physical condition, he suffered a blackout after heavy drinking. And so that's what it is. So he doesn't even know what happened. So let's just, you know, let him go back into the mines or some shit like that. Which is why they don't call his wife ever to the stand either.
Really?
I guess because then they'd have to go, so your husband threw you down the stairs. And she goes, yes, with her fucking cast on her arm. That's not good for you if you're the defense. So the defense here, they call a doctor in, Dr. Leo Rotar of Butte. And he says that it's very common for heavy drinkers. He said, quote, it would have been easier for Brooks because of his age and deteriorating physical condition to have an alcoholic blackout. They're trying to say, come on, he had a blackout. What's the big goddamn deal? They said that, you know, everybody got along fine most of the time. The witnesses said there was some hostility. The shit we just covered, it doesn't matter.
They're trying to wash this in a blackout with stabbing a man in the fucking chest?
Well, you know, they said it's all kind of a gray area, really. They said Roy himself testified. And he said, look, you know, Villalobos was always fucking verbally abusive toward me. And he was very abusive. He said that was it. He said he accidentally pushed his wife down the stairs. He said he had no recollection of having attacked Smith in his apartment with the knife and gotten punched in the face and saying he killed anybody. He said, that doesn't sound like me. I mean, it doesn't sound like me at all, does it? So he says, though, he was, quote, a long ways from sober, which I believe.
Yeah.
Now,
nobody is ever close to sober drinking that much whiskey.
Whiskey during the day. So the sun and whiskey, the sun intensifies a whiskey drunk, sure I feel does. Like. It really is not good. So the judge can give, tells the jury they can give 7 possible verdicts.
Okay.
7. This is a lot for a jury to have to pick from here. Not guilty, just not straight, not guilty. Guilty of first-degree murder with the death penalty, even though it hasn't been asked for. which is would be really bloodthirsty, guilty of first-degree murder with a life sentence, guilty of first-degree murder with a sentence left to the court, guilty of second-degree murder with the jury fixing the sentence, guilty of second-degree murder with the sentencing left to the court, guilty of manslaughter with the jury doing the sentencing, or guilty of manslaughter with the penalty going to the court. So
that was, yeah, that's a lot.
Those are their options, which is too many options for regular people who don't work in the legal system every day. Just tell them this or this. Pick one. Multiple choice.
Here are your choices. That's too much. What is this, the fucking menu to the Cheesecake Factory? Just give me choices.
It's a book, yeah. So they deliberate about 3 hours and 15 minutes, and they had time off for two different meals. I'm like, two different meals in three hours and 15 minutes? So the first, they come back with a verdict of second-degree murder, guilty, and set his punishment for 10 years, but without possibility of parole before 10 years. So 10 years with no parole.
He's got to do 10 years. Okay.
Yeah. So the judge told them, that's not acceptable. You can't do that. Out of all the options I gave you, which are way too many, see, this is the problem, you pick something that you can't do out of that somehow. Somehow. You did that. I don't know how you did
it. I gave you an idea. Take one of them. These are none of these.
He said that it's unacceptable because neither the court nor the jury may tell the parole board what they can or can't do. Okay. At that point, you couldn't say 10 years, but he can't be paroled for 10 years. Now you could say 20 years, no parole. But at that point, you couldn't set that. So you could only set a time and then they can release him whenever they want.
10 years, but every Saturday he has to do double time.
10 years, but when the prison softball team plays, he ain't even allowed to watch. That's it. Okay? All right. 10 years.
Monday through Friday, he still has to do some mining.
10 years, but no honey buns from the commissary. All right. That's it now. That's cruel. I don't know if that might be too much.
Well, yeah,
so the jury went back, and they come back with their second verdict, which is, guilty and obviously guilty. And the sentencing comes in. You, sir, may fuck off. 40 years he gets from the judge.
Holy.
Yes, he gets that shit from the judge. 40 years. So
that's death, right?
Oh, he's dead. Yeah, he's dead. He's got emphysema and fucking, what was it, psilocybin fucking mushroomitis or something? I don't know what he's got.
Silicon Valley. I don't know
what he's got. He's got silicon penis, I believe. That's not good.
Silicon Valley fever.
You can't have that. That's a bad one. So he's going to be dead quick.
Yeah.
He appeals in 67 based on the jury instructions. He said that the intoxication, he wanted more of the instruction of intoxication, could be a manslaughter thing instead of second degree murder. It's a long thing that we could go through, but we're not going to do it because we don't have the time. And also, he said the sentence of 40 years in state prison was unduly harsh and unreasonable. Yeah.
You murdered a man, sir.
Then threw your wife down the stairs. The court said if the fixing of the degree of the offense as fixed finds support in the evidence, and if the punishment is within the maximum limits fixed by law, then it's fine. So does it fit legally into the parameters? Is it legal? Then shut the fuck up, apparently.
Go back.
Denied, and we assume Roy died in prison pretty soon after that, I would assume, right?
He had to. There's a dank
1960s Montana prison. He's dead as shit, I think, right?
He lasted 12 years, I guarantee.
Maybe. I'm saying eight.
No way he got into his 80s.
69 he died. Roy Brooks, dead at 69. That's it. I'm going to say it right now, making the announcement. And that is Butte, Montana, everybody.
Stick that in your Butte.
Stick that in your Butte and smoke it. Speaking of that, go to patreon.com/crimeandsports. You get the whole back catalog, everything like that. Anybody $5 a month or above this week, and this will make sense in your Butteness. Yeah. We're going to talk about, first of all, you get access to everything. You get Crime and Sports. We're going to talk about the 0-26 beginning of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers franchise. No Tom Brady. No Warren Sapp.
No.
None of the guys. No Derek Brooks. None of those fucking people.
Any of these fucks.
No. You've never heard of it. They had Steve Spurrier, not as a coach, as a quarterback, literally. We'll talk about it. Then, for Small Town Murder, we're going to talk about somebody who's there's a lot of Butte work going on with. We're going to talk about Jody Arias, who likes it right in the Butte, and we'll talk about her murdering and her sex tape thing and her bizarre pictures life. That she just her bizarre life and
what a fascinating girl.
Jodi and her gas cans we'll talk about, which is the whole, that's the crux of the case. Yeah. She can say anything she wants. The gas cans make her guilty, period.
Ruins
that's
everything.
It.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Jodi Arias. That is patreon.com/crimeandsports. And you get a shout out at end of the regular show, of course. Definitely give a review if you can. 5 stars on whatever app you listen on. That definitely helps out a lot. Yeah. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com is where you get all of your tickets for live shows. Holy
Let's
shit.
Let's go!
Live show tickets and your merch. The rest of 2023 is on sale right now. And get in there, because Boston in November already sold out.
Right.
San Diego, almost there. Minneapolis, almost there. Salt Lake sold out. Denver almost sold out. Yeah. They're coming and going fast. And so get those. Get your tickets to 23rd and 24th of March. We'll be in Seattle those two nights. Those will be different shows both nights. And then we'll be in Portland the next night doing two shows. And those are also, those two shows will be different shows. So come see us there. Come see us at May 5th in Detroit, May 6th in Pittsburgh as well. Those are the next few. And April the 20th. 420 virtual live show. Let's get Jimmy stoned and make his head explode from laughing. That's what I got to do. Yeah. Just like a regular live show, except you're in your living room, and we have a regular setup, almost like you'd see in a theater, except you don't have to go anywhere.
Much more weed smoke.
Yes, and you can fucking drink your booze for a lesser price. It's a lot of fun, and smoke all the weed you want. Also, follow us on social media. We are at Small Town Murder on Instagram, at Murder Small on Twitter, at Small Town Pod on Facebook. You want to follow the two of us on social media, very easy to find us. ShutUpAndGiveMeMurder.com. Follow the links. Everything is there. Patreon, everything is on the site. Come hang out with us. Keep coming back each and every week. And until next week, everybody, it's been our pleasure.
Bye.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Small Town Murder early and ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen early and ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
In May of 1980, near Anaheim, California, Dorothy Jane Scott noticed her friend had an inflamed red wound on his arm and seemed unwell. She insisted on driving him to the local hospital to get treatment. While he waited for his prescription, Dorothy went to grab her car to pick him up at the exit, but would never be seen alive again, leaving us to wonder, decades later, what really happened to Dorothy Jane Scott. From Wondery, Generation Y is a podcast that covers notable true crime cases like this one and many more. Every week, hosts Aaron and Justin sit down to discuss a new case, covering every angle and theory, walking through the forensic evidence and interviewing those close to the case to try to discover what happened. And with over 450 episodes, there's a case for every true crime listener. Follow the Generation Y podcast on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.